Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this evening they were to have been the views of Bob Chapman, and we were going to talk about what's happening in the financial markets, but no sign of Bob so far, so it's just going to be you and me out there in the listening audience. And so if you have anything you'd like to talk about, give us a call at 1-888, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But I thought maybe in lieu of Bob being here, we'd talk a little bit about what's happening on the financial markets, what's really happening to the stability of our nation. Because, you see, the stability of a nation really is dependent upon the stability of the financial markets and the currency. And, of course, if you destroy the stability of the currency, why, you destroy the stability of the nation. Because, of course, we're all dependent upon money. As somebody once said, money makes the world go round. Maybe that was love, but money makes the world go around, too, and people certainly spend their whole time working so they'll have fun so they can retire and live comfortably after they're no longer able to work. But it's all dependent upon stability of money. But if you go and look at Great Britain, the currency of Great Britain was stable from 1240 up until about 1940, just before the Second World War. Prices in Great Britain were lower in 1940 than they were in 1800. So, I mean, over a period of almost 140 years, prices actually dropped in Great Britain, and that was because they had a stable currency. Over the period between 1240 and about 1940, prices in England rose about 0.4% a year. Very, very little. Here in the United States, we had stable prices really from about 1800 right up until 1913. Because that was because we had a gold-backed currency. But unfortunately, in 1913, we abandoned the strict gold backing of our currency, and we gave the Federal Reserve, which was a privately owned central bank dominated by J.P. Morgan and a small group of people who, of course, wanted to control the money of the nation, because they knew if they could control the money, they could control the nation. And so, basically, they were given instructions, a mandate by Congress, that if they would, of course, stabilize our economy so we wouldn't have a boom-bust cycle, and ensure the stability of our nation, that they could produce our currency, and it had to have at least 40% gold backing. In other words, they could produce about 60% more money than they had gold behind it, but since everybody didn't come at one time to turn their gold in, that was all right. They were going to be richly rewarded. They were going to make fabulous fortunes. But, of course, what people who authorized the Federal Reserve Act did not understand is that these people had another agenda. They were not simply interested in making a great deal of money. They had no intention of giving us a stable currency. In fact, they have destroyed 96% of the value of the dollar in 1913. And now, of course, we're on the way to destroying that remaining 4% of the value of our currency, because we are in a fiat money cycle with no end in sight. And we'll talk more about that, or give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I would love to talk to you when we get back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about really the background of the currency and of course, what's been happening this last few weeks on the currency markets. And again, we would love to have you give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have any comments about what we're talking about. But you have to understand that when you have men managing the currency rather than gold, you have no anchor, you have no stability at all, because men will always do what is expedient rather than what is right. And certainly America did have a gold-backed currency, at least some gold behind its currency, and even after Franklin Delano Roosevelt withdrew the gold in 1933, there was still gold there, so that the Federal Reserve System was prevented from just printing all the money they wanted to, and they had to certainly keep at least solid gold behind our currency so that they could not just expand the currency willy-nilly and create artificial prosperity. But down throughout history, fiat money systems have been repeatedly tried, whether it be ancient Greece, whether it be ancient Rome, certainly whether it would be the United States during the time of the Revolutionary War, when we had our continental currency, whether it be in France in the early 1700s under John Law, or in France, post-revolutionary France in 1789 under Robespierre, or certainly in Germany under the Weimar Republic, or time and time again throughout history. When you have a currency that has no solid backing, you find that politicians don't act responsibly, and they expand the money supply. Well, of course, here, of course, we have the Federal Reserve System that has that obligation to do what is right. Unfortunately, when they had the opportunity to do what was right, they were tried and found wanting. Well, there was the gold backing behind the American dollar right up until August 15th, 1971, when Richard Nixon unilaterally took the world off the gold standard. Prior to that time, of course, American dollar was tied to gold under the Bretton Woods Agreement, and all the currencies of the world were tied to the dollar. So indirectly through the stability of the American dollar, which came out of the post-war situation, why all the currencies of the world were limited by their dollar holdings. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our regularly scheduled guest isn't here, so you're going to have to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I was explaining that down through history, when currencies have had gold backing, so that even if you did have a paper currency, there had to be gold behind it, you did not expand the money supply. Now, you can create tremendous prosperity if you expand the amount of money that's in circulation, but sooner or later, why, of course, you have to pay the piper, because if you expand the money, there's nothing behind it, and, of course, you produce an artificial prosperity that really makes everything very, very good for a time, and then, of course, the economy really slows down. And the only thing you can do is, since you have no really checks and balances, why, you've got to put in more money. And the more money you put in, the less the value of the money. Remember, inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. Inflation has to do with the amount of money in circulation. See, it's sort of like the old idea that wet streets do not cause rain. Rain causes wet streets. Well, it is expanding the money supply that causes inflation. And, of course, what we're seeing today is the beginning of an inflationary spiral that is going to destroy literally everything that most Americans have. And so if you understand that it was in 1917 when Richard Nixon took the world off the gold standard. It was August 15th, I'll never forget it. And at that time we had an inflation rate of 5%. and Richard Nixon imposed wage and price controls on the economy here in the United States to control the rapid inflation that we had that was very obvious. We're about to destroy the value of our currency, and of course he had to take them off. Remember 1971, we were in the Vietnamese War, and we weren't, of course, financing the war by raising taxes. We were doing it by borrowing money. And that's the oldest trick in the world. After all, if the individual has to pay for these senseless wars like Vietnam, or even if we were paying for the senseless war in Iraq today, the American people would really be up in arms. So they were borrowing money, and begin 1971 to about 1979, the inflation rate went up to over 16 to 17%. And at that point in time, Paul Volcker, to his credit, did exactly what was correct. He raised the interest rate here in the United States to 21%. He cut off access to credit. People who were making a great deal of money, a number of my friends at that time, had put in condominium projects and apartment house projects and built beautiful townhouses out along the shore of the bay here. And they'd done it all on borrowed money, but they knew they were going to make a lot of money back. You borrow money, you invest it, and then you make a tremendous profit. You pay it back, and everybody's happy. And that's the way the system works, or at least they thought that's how the system worked. And then, of course, when Paul Volcker suddenly shut down access to credit and raised interest rates to 21%, and there were a lot of people who wanted to buy those beautiful townhouses along the beach frontage, and a lot of my doctor friends had invested there, so they were going to get a share of the profits, and none of the people could qualify with a bank for a loan. None of them could qualify, and month after month after month, my friends, my doctor friends were paying exorbitant amounts of interest, and you can do that for a while, but with no end in sight, and those interest rates coming up every single month, eventually they lost the whole thing, and they lost the property, they lost their entire investment, and now this happened, and for a couple of years we had a very difficult time, 1980, 1981, and of course part of that economic contraction at that time was with the election of Ronald Reagan in 1981. And, of course, at that time, the national debt was $1 trillion. It had taken us literally almost 200 years from 1789, when America was created, until 1980 to actually accumulate $1 trillion in our national debt. Today, the national debt is over $9 trillion, and simply in a matter of 27 years. Why we've increased the debt nine times over what it had taken us almost 200 years to accumulate. Well, we've got some callers here. Perhaps we'll get back to this subject or some other subject. But let's go to Ken calling from Seal Beach. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Pretty good. Okay, here's what I have to say. In 1936, John J. McCloy sat with Adolf Hitler in the 1937 Olympics in Hitler's box. 24 years later, in 1960, he was with Khrushchev in Russia, shaking his hand, having some vodka. Okay. 1947, McCloy joined the CIA. And in 1963, our so-called president appoints him to head the CIA. Now, what kind of a president would appoint a man with a track record like that?
Well, maybe the same sort of president, the 1963, you're saying?
That's correct. He was appointed in 63.
Was he appointed by Kennedy? Was he appointed
Kennedy.
By
Kennedy. Oh, John Kennedy. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, John Kennedy was simply going along with the advice he was getting from people who surrounded him, people like McGeorge Bundy and, of course, Dean Rusk, and they were all, of course, coming from the Council on Foreign Relations. Rusk had come from the Rockefeller Foundation. McGeorge Bundy had come from the Ford Foundation. Both men returned to their respective foundations at the end of their tenure. And really, McCloy, certainly, you remember, McCloy ended up on the Warren Commission team to find out who killed John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
John J. McCloy was certainly one of the movers and shakers of modern times. He was the High Commissioner of Germany after the Second World War, and certainly was instrumental, of course, in working with Operation Paperclip and the rat line that they got the Nazis smuggled out of Germany to South America. He was part of what I call the occult hierarchy of the Brotherhood of Darkness.
But what I'm saying is some of my liberal friends tell me how great Kennedy was.
Well, of course, why don't you ask him about his sexual escapades? I mean, he was one of the most... He gave an alley cat, certainly would have better morals than John Kennedy had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And, of course, they want to glorify him because, of course, he was assassinated. I think that's a terrible tragedy, but he was not a moral man. He was certainly... he got into the presidency because his father worked with the mafia. They stole the election from Richard Nixon, and John Kennedy paid a terrible price for that.
Correct, but it just absolutely amazes me when you figure that John Kennedy was a hero in World War II, PT-109, sort of a hero, let's put it that way, and yet a man who cavorted with Hitler is the guy he picks after the Bay of Pigs.
Right, well, a lot of strange things go on.
Okay, that's basically it.
But you have to understand that there are a lot of people here in this country who were supporting Adolf Hitler. People like Henry Ford.
Oh, yeah.
And we never want to talk about that. Of course, we never want to talk about the fact that Ford, justified his support for Hitler because Hitler was not a communist, but everybody's forgotten that Henry Ford supported the communists as well and built the Ford Motor Plant at Gorky. Now, what everybody has really forgotten, the common denominator, is that Henry Ford was deeply involved in theosophy and occultism, and, of course, so was Adolf Hitler. And when you understand that Adolf Hitler, the way he was able to control people was because he was a disciple of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. He read her secret doctrine regularly. He was under the spell of the occult. He actually was demonically possessed, in my estimation. And this is how he was able to hold those crowds, for hours as they would sit there transfixed, listen to him. And, of course, how he was able to use his will to control an entire nation. Until we look at the occult nature of what's going on, and certainly John McCloy was part and parcel of that.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Ken.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to, we've got Ed calling from New Hartford, New York. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I just want to thank you so much for the focus that you have, especially in the recent days on financial situation.
Well, I'll tell you what, these are sure exciting times, aren't they?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been reading more and more, but you're not getting information from the churches. You're not getting information from... I listen quite a bit to Christian radio, and I'm not hearing anything about the situation that's going on in the country financially.
No, but financially, and of course the tragedy, so many of our Christian ministries are solidly behind the administration because they claim to be Christian, and the good people of this country, the good Christian people of this country, don't realize that their leaders are being manipulated. And I guess we all have egos. I'll tell you what, I probably would be taken in for George Bush if I hadn't met him, and he looked in my eyes, and he lied to me. And I knew at that point, back in 1999, that we could never trust him. But I will tell you that I was with a group of Christians, and with only one other exception, there were about 20 people at that meeting I attended. Every other person there, with the exception of John Stormer, was taken in by George Bush because he said exactly what the Christians wanted him to say. I'm not sure he believed what he said, but he was certainly been very well schooled in speaking in Christianese. In other words, he could see what Christians wanted to hear, and they believed him.
You know, don't we understand that people are basically sinful creatures until they meet the Lord?
Amen to that. Well, I think that a lot of people don't want to admit that man is basically sinful, and that you really can't trust them. And that's what our founding fathers said, and that's why they wanted to limit the power of government, because they knew that you could never trust people with power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Hey, we're going to be back. Hang on just for a moment. We'll let you talk to the break here.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and if our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we'd love to hear from you. Our regularly scheduled guest just didn't show up tonight. I hope he's all right. There have been a number of unsuccessful attempts on his life, and every time he does show up, I always worry about him. Anyway, we've got Ed on the line from New Hartford, New York. Are you up by Attica or Utica, Ed?
Right near Utica.
Okay, fine. So we're coming in there on that big radio station there out of Utica.
Yeah, 50,000-watt station out of Cherry Valley. That's near Albany.
Okay, well, I'm just so glad we have an opportunity. We've got a lot of good listeners up there. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I just have been recently reading a book by Larry Bates, and it's a recent, it's maybe 2 or 3 years old. But the focus that he's showing to me is how close we are to the destruction of our currency, and even back then. And we're a lot worse today, I'm sure.
I'm sure we are. But people really don't understand currency, and they don't understand you have to have stability, and you can't keep printing more and more and more and more and more money, which is, of course, what the Federal Reserve has been doing, and especially since 1981. Had they done the right thing at that time, we would not be in the mess we are today.
What protection do we have? I mean, this looks more like it was in Germany back previous to or between the two world wars.
Well, of course, we're certainly not to that point, because there, of course, you had rampant inflation. We're just at the beginning stages of the inflation. Right now, our inflation rate is about 11%, but certainly if we don't bring this under control, we'll be up to 15 or 20% a year in the next couple of years, if we last that long. And then, of course, once you get to 20%, why, of course, the sky's the limit. And they can simply wipe out the value of everything you have literally overnight, as they did down in Argentina a few years ago, where simply the people went to bed one evening sure that their peso was as secure as the American dollar, because the peso was tied to the dollar. And the next morning they woke up and they found that their peso was worth 25 cents to the dollar. And there was nothing they could do about it. They had a terrible, of course, problem for a time. People had lost their life savings, but eventually they got through it. And now, of course, the country's not doing well. But at least the economy's beginning to grow and to begin to reestablish a stable currency. They did all that they could really do. The government had no choice because, of course, it had printed so many pesos and they had to bring the currency under control before they got into a Weimar Republic, a situation like they have in Rhodesia today, where they have 10,000% a year inflation. 10,000% a year.
That's almost impossible to understand.
Well, but you see, remember, we brought that regime to power. We brought Mugabe to power back in 1980. And Henry Kissinger did that. And Henry Kissinger is still running things here in the United States. If you read the latest book by Bob Woodward, he will tell you that Henry Kissinger, whenever he comes to Washington, D.C., why both Dick Cheney and George Bush cancel everything to talk to Henry. Henry is the man representing the Brotherhood. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We're talking really about what's happening to the economy, or whatever you'd like to talk about. Certainly, we were talking with Ed from New Hanford, New York. He's listening to our station up there in New York, out of Utica. 50,000-watt station that booms in his area there every evening, and certainly about what's going on in Rhodesia, where they have 10,000% a year inflation. And, of course, this was brought about thanks to Henry Kissinger. But Henry Kissinger was the man who forced Mugabe onto the Rhodesian people with the promise that if anything ever went wrong, America would stand behind Rhodesia and never allow that wonderful country where there was no racial discrimination ever to fall into chaos. And of course, now most of the whites have fled. The country is in chaos. The blacks, almost, well, I think the country had about 12 million people in it. 5 million of the blacks have fled, and most of the whites have fled. The people are starving to death there today, thanks to, of course, to American policy. And we are still backing Mugabe. Oh, we have a few little restrictions on some of the people there, but we are still doing everything we can to keep him in power. But we can't let the American people know that under any circumstances. If Henry Kissinger, who is one of the closest advisors to our current president, can do that to Rhodesia, and Henry Kissinger really represents the occult hierarchy that rule the world, these people who work behind the scenes, who want to bring about a one-world government and a one-world order and a new world religion and a new world leader. If he can do that to Rhodesia, what does he have planned for America? Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But anything else you want to say, Ed?
Well, I just thank you so much, Dr. Stan, for your continued focus on this issue, because I think that it's probably one of the most crucial things to deal with for the near future. So God bless you, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you so
much. We'll be continuing to pray for you.
I appreciate that. And all we can do is at least try to get our listeners to make the preparations that they're going to have to, and to realize, of course, we're on the edge of a financial Armageddon, and at least a small number of people, hopefully, are going to be able to survive the terrible times that lie ahead. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I just have a short list of things, if I could.
Go ahead.
Yeah. My big question about the fiat currency, just exactly what it is, it's so hard for people to understand that a currency could be whatever the money managers, I don't want to say the government in our case, whatever the money managers decide it should be, right?
Well, basically, fiat means government, a dictate, and the government dictates that you will have this currency. And the problem is that there is nothing behind it. It's simply a piece of paper with a value printed on it. They can put whatever value they want to. In a stable currency, why, of course, you can only print a certain amount of paper money. But in a fiat money system, you can print as much as you want to, and it produces tremendous prosperity for some. But, of course, eventually, the vast majority of the people have all of their wealth invested in this paper that has no value, is not backed by gold or by silver or by anything else. And of course, you get into an inflationary spiral. You have to get into an inflationary spiral because, of course, the economy begins to slow. The politicians begin to, you know, to print more paper to keep the economy going. And the economy does well for a short period of time. And then it begins to slow, and you print more paper. And then it slows, and you print more paper. And eventually, the paper you have becomes, well, it returns to its ultimate value, which is nothing.
Well, that expansion and contraction and the printing more and then needing more and printing more, that whole cycle, isn't that really just a system of thievery?
Yes, of course it is. In fact, this is an invisible tax. It's a means of stealing from the people.
So people end up pouring all their lives into paying interest, rather than actually paying for goods, paying for principal.
No, basically what happens is that people put their life savings into this, and it ends up having no value. And so they lose anything that their bank accounts are gone, their bonds, their stocks, their annuities, their pension fund. And, of course, the people are impoverished. This is what always happens. And this is, of course, part of the plan. It's laid out in the Earth Charter, equitable distribution of wealth within nations, between nations, and they're simply transferring our wealth to other nations throughout the world. And, in fact, it was Warren Buffett who recently said, you know, maybe in 20 or 30 years, most Americans will be sharecroppers. living in their own country. We'll be right back, Mike. Okay, Mike, go right ahead.
I just want to share one thing that I've shared before, so some people have heard it and others haven't, about the gold held by the Federal Reserve. You can go to the New York Federal Reserve website. It's typed in New York Fed. I think you'll get it. It might be nyfed.org or something like that. On 33 Liberty Street, of all addresses, they had to end up with that one. And if you click around on their home page, and you'll find a thing that says a tour of vault. They give you a website tour of the vault, and there's about a 17 or 18 page write up that they have with pictures, and it's really nice. But they explain how gold is a relic. It's a relic of the past, or something. I can't quote exactly. I'd have to go get my thing. I'd print the whole thing out, but it's just something that nobody really uses anymore. They're holding gold for all different nations and large money individuals and, of course, the United States. And they say that they have a whole $360 worth of gold. That's with a D, dollar. The $360 worth of gold for each person in the United States.
Okay, that might probably be fairly close.
I'd like to have that much gold, right, actually. But back to what you were saying about Paul Volcker, and I want to ask, in what sense did he do the right thing when you said he did the right thing? Was that for the nation or for them or for...
No, he did the right thing from a purely theoretical monetary point of view. When you have runaway inflation with a fiat money system, which we were on in 1979 and 1980 and 1981, he actually, of course, cut back. Instead of expanding the monetary supply, which was what ordinarily would be done in printing more money to try to get out of the mess, he quit printing money. He made money difficult to get. He raised interest rates so people could not borrow money. And he did exactly what needed to be done to break the back of the inflation that threatened to destroy our country at that time. That's what should be done now. It should have been done 10 years ago, and we might have been able to save our currency. I think it's far too late to do that at the present time, but Paul Volcker, to his credit, did what was right at that time from a theoretical point of view. We should have gone then immediately back onto a gold standard, but they elected not to, and these fellows, the elite, said, we're going to run this thing, and of course, I really think that they are following a cosmic plan that will eventually lead America into World War III and the destruction of our economy. And you hang on there, Mike. We'll have a little break here, and then you come right back on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest right now, of course, is Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We got a fairly... crowded board, but we do have, I think, one more line available if somebody wants to call in. Mike, go ahead. But well, I hope that Mike was asking, why did I say that Paul Volcker had done the right thing in 1980 and 1979? I simply pointed out that ordinarily when you have an inflationary spiral, as we had at that time with a 17% inflation, why in a fiat money system, why you'd simply print more money to try to keep the economy going. And Paul Volcker didn't do that. He contracted the money supply. He made credit not available. He raised the interest rates to 21%. And he contracted the entire economy for about a year and a half to 2 years until the inflation, the inflated economy that we had, simply went back to some semblance of normal. That, of course, took us into the Reagan recession. It had nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. It was all there before he ever came into office. But certainly Paul Volcker had far more to do with running our economy than Ronald Reagan ever did. People don't understand that the presidents are simply pawns in this game. They do what they're told. It is the people who control the reins of our currency who run our country, whether the Democrats or the Republicans are in power. And whether we're talking about the United States or we're talking about England or we're talking about Europe or Japan, it is the bankers who control the nation. Go right ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, the presidents are pawns, and JFK didn't go along with it, so they gave him that one-way trip. But back when you said they elected not to do the next right thing, which would have been to return us to the gold standard.
In 1981, right.
In 81. And do you suppose maybe they elected not to do the right thing? They made one right step, but then they didn't make the next right step.
Right.
Don't you suppose that they didn't want to do that? Because if they did, then they couldn't run the whole cycle again and make piles more money next time around.
That may very well have been one of the motivations behind it. But you have to understand that there is a spiritual force that energizes a lot of these people, whether they know it or not. And if you read the writings of the occultists, they will tell you that some of these people who know what they're doing, many of them, though, we simply control. We put the thoughts in their minds, and they carry out the directives. And then if you get my little pamphlet on the occult hierarchy, we give you the references in the occult writings that come out of the Lucius Trust and the New Group of World's Servers and other similar organizations. They all tie into this Luciferian movement. And they're quite open that they control the people who control the world. That's what it's all about. So I can't tell you the motivation of any of the individual people at that time. All I can tell you is they did not do what they should have done. And if you'll be reading my next couple of newsletters, we simply give you Alan Greenspan's testimony for the House Banking Committee in year 2004, 2005. And he points out that, you know, they could have done, what should have been done in 1918, but they decided to act responsibly and have the central banks act as if there were a commodity standard. And, of course, the truth of the matter is he was lying. They did not act as they should have, as if there were a commodity standard. They started this on one of the greatest inflationary spirals of all time. And not only the United States, but the entire world is on an inflationary spiral. They can only end up with disaster.
Well, the whole world is on a fractional reserve system.
Right.
Okay, one more thing and I'll get off. Back to the part where you said that Volcker did the right thing by tightening up on the credit and raising the interest rates to stop that spiral. I would agree with you. You're the expert about that was the right thing for the nation. But it seems to me they would have also that would have also been very good for them because, I mean, the big money guys, the lenders, the money changers, the interest went up and the credit got tightened. People couldn't even borrow to pay the high interest rates, and how many went into default, like the friends you were talking about, in the real estate deals. And so then all these guys collected on the collateral.
You're absolutely right. The rich got richer and the poor got poor.
Yep.
Okay. God bless. Thanks very much.
All
right, fine. Well, let's go to Kurt, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kurt.
Hello there.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, I'm taking notes.
All right, go ahead. You have a question or comment.
You've said several times, and I'm quite interested in looking up the sources. You said that Hitler was a follower of Madame Blavatsky.
Yes, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky.
And in my readings, I haven't run across that, though I've heard it several times, and I want to look it up, look up sources on that.
All right, fine. Well, let's see where you could find. I'm just searching my memory. Do you have access to a computer?
Sure do.
All right, just go up and Google in Adolf Hitler, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and actually, of course, Hitler had a copy of her book, The Secret Doctrine, which he read every evening. And in fact, it said that in the National Archives is his copy of The Secret Doctrine.
Oh.
This is where, of course, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky talks about how Satan is God. I'll tell you what the other source you can get would be my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and I think they can get the reference to it there. But the easiest thing is go on Google and Google in Adolf Hitler, Theosophy, or Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, or The Secret Doctrine, which was their two-volume set, where she really lays out her whole doctrine of Luciferianism.
Okay, and then what about Ford?
Henry Ford. Certainly, the reference is to that is in a book called Spiritual Politics by Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson. And then, of course, Constance Cumby, if you want to get her number, we can put you in touch with her. She talks about a book that actually goes into that. But Spiritual Politics talks about how Henry Ford was into spiritualism.
And who wrote that?
Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davidson. The book is out of print, but it's a very important book, and I'm sure you can get a copy on Amazon. Spiritual Politics, that's where you'll learn about how Sidney Andrew Carnegie was into spiritualism. J.P. Morgan was into spiritualism. In fact, I came across a wonderful quote on the Internet the other day when I was going. I was looking up J.P. Morgan and spiritualism Googling that in. And there's a book written by a medium, and she quotes J.P. Morgan as saying, millionaires don't go to mediums and spiritualists. Billionaires do.
Huh.
And, of course, he was a billionaire.
Now, as soon as I get my Xerox machine serviced, I have 1946 or 48 Theosophy catalog that I found in an antique store. I'm going to make a copy of that for you.
All right, I really appreciate that, Kurt. Anything else? Henry Ford?
Yeah, supposedly wrote a text or an instruction book or pamphlet or something that Hitler used to train the Germans to be anti-Semitic.
I don't know that, but he did write a book called The International Jew, that he actually circulated here in the United States through his newspaper, The Dearborn Independent. And this, of course, says that the Jewish bankers, run the whole world. And, of course, this, like the protocols itself, is an effort to draw you away from who really does run the world, and that's the occultists. And, of course, the protocols were written by the Theosophists. And, of course, this whole idea of focusing our attention on Jewish bankers is to draw our attention away from the real source of power. And that is, of course, is this occult hierarchy. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't a few people in key positions within the Jewish religion who are actually part of this world satanic movement. And Barry Shamas talks a great deal about them. They're the Sabbateans. They are a sect of Judaism that hates Judaism. They're Jews, but who hate Israel. And this is why the people in our country are putting so much pressure on Israel give up all the land to the Palestinians. Why would you? I mean, I will tell you that if the Zionists really control Washington, D.C., they're doing a pretty poor job. The Oslo Accord was basically a blueprint for the destruction of the nation of Israel. And, of course, Olmert today is releasing all sorts of terrorists. Hardly a week goes by, he doesn't release a couple of hundred Palestinian terrorists and murderers that the Israelis hold and get nothing in return for it. Why would you do that? I mean, here's Olmert arming the Fatah people who hate Israel and are dedicated to its destruction. When you understand that the leaders of Israel today certainly are tied into, in one way or the into the Sabbateans, you can understand why they're doing everything they can to betray Israel. And I pray for the people over there because they're in real trouble. Our leaders are betraying them just like our leaders are betraying us.
Oh, indeed. And then, of course, there's the Frankists also.
Right. Well, the Frankists and the Sabbateans are the same.
Yeah. Now, there's another thing. My understanding is that evidently, well, of course, the Bowers, or Rothschild,
right.
Real name being Bauer, the Bowers had funded Napoleon, they funded Wellington. They funded both sides, and they've always done that in wars. And my understanding is that they did fund Hitler also.
Well, I have no question that they did, sure.
Yeah. Now, the thing is... But
it wasn't simply the Rothschilds that were doing... Hitler was being funded by American corporations. If you haven't seen the letter that I found from Ambassador Dodd sent to Colonel House in 1936, asking... Now, this is the American ambassador to Germany in 1936. And any of our listeners that like a copy will be glad to send it to you. And I found this back at the Sterling Library at Yale. And here's the American ambassador writing to Colonel House and saying, why are American corporations building up the German war machine here in 1936. I mean, nobody wants a war. But there's 100 American corporations. They're providing all the material for the German war machine. Do the American stockholders know that they can't get a profit out of Germany? Why would they be building up Hitler if they can't make a profit out of it?
Oh, yeah, that was insane.
Well, no, it's not insane. It's diabolical, but not insane.
Yeah, true.
And then if you haven't read the book, of course, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Sidney Professor Sutton, and then Trading with the Enemy by Charles Hingham. They not only built up Adolf Hitler before the war, they were trading with Hitler and providing the things he needed during the Second World War.
Well,
while our boys were dying on the beaches of Normandy.
IBM, you know, went in. They didn't have anything confiscated. They went afterwards, picked up all their Hollerith machines. Edwin Black's book on IBM and the Holocaust. I mean, Watson had to know because of the stuff that they provided, you know,
sure,
the Hollerith cards and the engineering. He had to know and be totally complicit in the Holocaust. And yet he didn't. He was never tried at Nuremberg. And like other American companies, he didn't lose anything.
But what you have to understand is that so many of the people of great wealth, the heads of corporations, are there because they have sold out to the dark side, to the dark spiritual side. They've gone over to the other side. And, of course, they're working for the prince of this world. You remember when Jesus was on the Mount of Temptation and the devil said to him, if you simply fall down and worship me, I can give you all of the world. How could the devil make that promise unless he controlled it? And, of course, if you really understand what's going on, then if you haven't heard my talk on the forbidden secret, you'll find out that most of the great leaders throughout the world, down for the last 5,000 years, have been in touch with this other dimension, with the dark dimension. And
you know,
this is, of course, where so many of the great ideas and so much of the power and the wealth has come from. And I really believe that many of the people in our great corporations today have gone over to the dark side.
Here's a warning to your listeners. You know, I was given an offer a couple of times. Once in the 60s, they had the Communist Party in San Jose, and they tried to recruit me to deliver the money to fund the SDS, who were paid professional writers.
Wait a minute, but who was trying to recruit you?
A member of the Communist Party in San Jose.
Right.
And they offered me, you know, a list of people that are planning to kill, and I asked, gee, why are you going to kill those? And they said, just to create, chaos. But, you know, we're required by law, if someone says they're going to kill someone, we're required to go to the police. So I went to the FBI, and they were showing me files of these guys, and they knew very, very well that the SDS were paid professional communist rioters. So that was one offer.
In fact, they were probably helping even to come up with a lot of the money for them, because the FBI has been, working, funding the communist movement. You have to have an enemy. This is what it's all about.
Yeah, it's interesting. So that was one offer from the dark side. The other offer from the dark side, actually, my involvement or near involvement was approved by Constance Cumby. And she was horrified later when she realized what it was. You know, there was this, I call it a Nazi college. It was a New Age college in the Bay Area here. And they offered me the chair of the Department of Wind Instruction. And at meetings at lunchtime, I'd be, like I was with this communist, I'd be silent, which is, as you know, not like me at all. And I'd be silent and listen and listen and listen, and he thought I was fascinated, and in a way I was, because I was seeing, you know, the dark side face to face. I cannot verify this in any way, but my gut level feeling was, my gosh, this is Odessa, and I was listening, and so I was very silent. I was going, Odessa is real, and I'm talking to it, and. So, you know, they were telling me their plans for the variety of colleges. He owned a number of colleges around the world. This fellow just died within the last year. And, you know, I was offered the chair, and I called Constance, and I said, what do I do? And she said, well, you'd be the only one on campus telling the truth. As you know, I lead people to Christ left and right. And so I said, all right, I'll do it. So I took the job. And then I started praying, and this is something for your listeners. Prayer is really powerful.
It's the only thing we have, because you and I, in our own strength, can't stand against any of this.
Pardon me?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so I prayed. I said, Lord, this is really scary. I mean, this is what killed my family in Europe. And, you know, I said, there's got to be something done. I don't know what to do. And the funny thing is, both, they were going to change campuses and open a campus in Soquel, right across the valley from you, on top of the hill there. And I prayed, and both properties went in escrow. The one down the southern side of the bay, in Seaside, went through escrow, and they got their money. The one in Soquel fell out of escrow, and that was 1983 or 85, and they never did have a campus again.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for sharing that with us, Kurt.
Yeah, thank you very much.
God bless. And let's go to Carlos calling from Carson. Hi, Carlos. How you doing?
Hey, very well, Dr. Stan. Real good. Thank you. Thank God, anyway. We're all doing well. But you know what? A couple of different topics here. One is Katrina. I heard yesterday that FEMA was trying to take back the initial money given to some of the people that were displaced. It was a couple of thousand, $2,000 to $4,000 that were given to several people.
You're talking about in New Orleans?
Yes, in New Orleans.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I've heard similar things as well. I don't know it to be a fact, but it could be true. Hold just a moment.
Yeah.
Go right ahead, Carlos.
Yes, well, I've heard this, and it was somebody who seemed to know the story quite well.
Right.
FEMA was trying to collect the money back after all these people went through that tragedy, that crisis of being displaced, deliberately deprived of food, shelter, water, medical care, and I say deliberately because the Red Cross apparently had supplies and all that to provide them. There were ships anchored right outside there who had supplies also, and these were negated.
Well, I think this Carlos did never take any money from the government because you never know where you're gonna, what it's going to cost you. We actually got some money from the government for putting a solar system in. Oh, they're going to give you this rebate. And so we put in the solar system. Then they came in and made us pay income tax on the money they'd given us. Talk about chutzpah. Beware of a government agent bearing gifts.
Exactly. But, you know, really, when I think about that whole Katrina episode, my opinion has always been that the whole thing was contrived.
I think you're absolutely right. I think so, too. Because remember, the hurricane did not hit New Orleans. The hurricane veered just before it got to New Orleans, and it was only a severe storm, and of course, those dikes didn't rupture until about 30 minutes after the storm had passed, and the streets were already drying out. And yet, a lot of people who think that maybe there was some hanky-panky in those dikes coming down. And, of course, now a lot of the people who fix their homes up, finally they're going to lose them because they've been condemned for a big housing project. Hey, we're going to have to run, Carlos. I got one more caller.
Okay, thank you.
God bless. And thanks. Good to hear from you. And let's go to Dan quickly from Los Angeles. Dan, we're about out of time. A quick question or comment?
Okay, well, the national debt stands at about $8.9 trillion
right,
with the T. That's the outstanding immediate liquid debt, which is really the only one that really is the important one now. But if you look at, as you know, that the tax-exempt foundations are holding, the big three are holding about $12 trillion. So that's the ability to move the liquid into the world market because, you know, I talk with another guy that has the radio show, Bo Greitz, and, you know, he says, well, we just mint a coin and put it in the treasury, but that's not a real solution because you have to do an exchange. You have to have like a one-year exchange, dollar-for-dollar exchange window to replace the currency with the constitutional currency.
Okay,
we're
out of time, Dan.
Okay,
I'll call it next week.
Real quickly, though, I heard Aaron Russo died this morning.
Out of time.
And go to Google Video and watch Freedom to Fascism.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we always enjoy our open lines. Just missed having Bob with us tonight because we always enjoy having his, especially at this time. If you'd like to really understand the background of so much of what you we're facing today, let me suggest a pamphlet we've written called The History of Money. It's an inexpensive little pamphlet, and then my talk on the financial tsunami, and it comes with an excellent syllabus, and we recommend both the DVD and or video and the syllabus together. And you have to understand that we have a number of things coming together, which would be the carry trade, the hedge funds, the derivative market, the collapsing housing market, the rising price of oil, the globalization, which is sending our jobs offshore, and all, certainly the aging population that are going to need their pension payments, and there's no money there to pay them, and so much more. We hope you'll get the talk on financial tsunami, because it will help you to better understand where we are in this economic cycle today. And our advice to you is get out of debt and do not do what the other people are doing. I mean, because if you do what everybody else is doing, you're going to be destroyed. And most of the American people are going to be impoverished before this is over. So certainly you need good financial advice. I am not a financial counselor. I'm simply an amateur historian, but we hope that you will listen to our program, because we get some very, very smart people here, and we certainly encourage you to listen to their advice and make your preparations accordingly, and do not put this off. And then, of course, we do hope many of you will want to get my book DVD or video on the Brotherhood of Darkness, because you cannot understand anything going on today unless you understand the spiritual forces that are at work within our society. You need to get my talk on the forbidden secret, which will take you into the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, has been known to the important people, the men who have shaped the history and the events of the last 5,000 years, from Plato and Aristotle to Alexander the Great, through Napoleon, through Thomas Edison, through Henry Ford. They all knew this secret. And you need to know what the secret is, but the last thing you want to do is to try to access the power that is there. Because if you do, it will cost you your eternal soul. So let me suggest the forbidden secret. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on The Secret Behind the Secret, which addresses Rhonda Byrne's a book on this, and she's talking about exactly the same secret force, but she thinks each of you ought to learn how to access it, and certainly she's been endorsed by Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and by Ellen DeGeneres and by Jim Carrey and by Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul, the fame, and millions of people have read their material, and millions of people are going to lose their eternal salvation because they follow her advice. Understand what it's about? It's a four-tape or four-CD set called The Secret Behind the Secret. And then, of course, let me suggest a four-tape set, a four-CD set on the supernatural, and the book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil. And then, of course, the Malachi Martin material, the four-tape sets, interviews with Malachi Martin, four-tape or four-CD, and, of course, the book that goes with that, Hostage to the Devil. And we do hope that you'll, of course, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs there on the Internet 3 hours a day, and then link to the other websites. We do 5 hours of talk radio a day. We do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because we really depend primarily on those of you in the listening audience to help us. And our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then pray for America. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, this evening they're going to be the views of Ralph Emerson, who's going to be our special guest for this next hour. I just wanted to mention that apparently my producer had said that the last caller from the last hour had said that Aaron Russo had passed away today, and I knew Aaron was very, very ill. I had not heard that he'd passed away, but I know he had inoperable bladder cancer, and we'd talked to him a number of times about that personally. If anybody out there in the audience knows whether this is true or not, why, give us a call, and because, of course, he was a great patriot. And his film, From Freedom to Fascism, is very important. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it, and you need to have other people see it. So if anybody knows if it's true that Aaron had passed away today, let us know. And certainly he needs an official tribute. But right now, of course, let's get to our guest. Incidentally, if you need our number, it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But Ralph, how are you tonight?
Dr. Stan, that's a tragic piece of information.
I'm not saying it's true.
You know, I understand, but if it is, I'll tell you, that man was very, very, very courageous.
He sure was, and he deserves our eternal vote of thanks.
Yes.
We're just going to talk to you tonight about, you'd had an opportunity to meet somebody that I'd had an opportunity to meet, and I never met him in person, but I did have an opportunity to talk to him on the phone on several occasions, and that was the Dr. Dunnigan, who was a pediatrician in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we have an interview with him, and then we have three other interviews, were done by a woman named Randy Engel. And we put this into a four-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians. And it's the only tape set or CD set we have that has a transcript with it. It's the only one, but somebody else had done the transcript. But we felt his information was so vitally important. And then when I heard that you had actually had an opportunity, did you actually meet him in person or just talk to him?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I'm going to let you tell the story then, because I think that... you can corroborate what I said, or I can corroborate what you say about him. How did you happen to meet Dr. Dunnigan?
Well, I went to Pittsburgh in 1989 to give a speech to a patriotic group, and after the speech was over, Dr. Dunnigan came up to me and said, I did not know him. He was just another person in the audience. And he said he had a story he wanted to tell me, but he wanted to do it in private. In other words, I don't think he was going to... He never said that he had never made it public before, but at least he wanted me to have the story and that I could use it. So the next morning he showed up at my hotel and we sat and talked, and he explained to me that he was interned in 1965 in a hospital in Pittsburgh, and he became a good friend of the head of the department. And he told me that he did not want me to use the doctor's name nor his name either, but he wanted me to know the story.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the person was Dr. Richard Day, who later would become the head of the neonatology at his university, and then later would become the president, or I should say the medical director of Planned Parenthood. So, anyway, go right ahead with the story there, Rob.
That's what he wanted me to understand, that he became a good friend of Dr. Day's because he was the head of his department while he was interning.
Right.
In another hospital. And that Dr. Day quit in 1965 and went to work for Planned Parenthood in New York City for 3 years between 1960.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Ralph. Well, Ralph, you go ahead and pick up this story.
Okay, so Dr. Day, and by the way, now I'm going to explain to you that I can use his name because Dr. Dunnigan sent me his Dr. Day's obituary, which means he's no longer with us, so I don't think I could do any damage by revealing his story. But anyway, in 1968, he quit Planned Parenthood in New York and went to teach at some medical school in New York City. But on March the 20th, 1969, he came back to Pittsburgh to address the Pittsburgh Pediatrician Society. And Dr. Dunnigan supplied me with a copy of the documentation for that, so I know that he did indeed offer that speech. And then he asked me not to mention.
Did you just have a copy of that documentation?
Yes, I do indeed.
Would
and also also the obituary that when Dr. Day passed away.
Would you mind making me copies? Oh. We could send that off with our four tape sets. You go right ahead.
Certainly. So anyway, he said that he wanted me to, the title of the speech Dr. Day was going to deliver was Family Planning, Infant Mortality, Gene Frequency, Abortion, and Other Considerations. But he didn't want to talk about those other things. He wanted to talk about other considerations. So he came out, he was introduced, and I guess probably a couple hundred people there or so. They weren't allowed to bring their guests, I guess, and their family if they wished. So Dr. Day came out, and after getting past the obligatory, thank you for inviting me, and it's kind of good to see you again, he said, if I see anyone recording my speech, if I see anyone making notes, I will walk off the stage. I want you to know I'm going to tell you some things that you're not going to believe, and if you repeat what I say, I'm going to disavow the statement and deny it and publicly embarrass you. And it was, and secondly, or thirdly, or whatever, I can assure you that no one will believe you anyway. Now, let's remember the date. This is 1969. That's, what, nearly 40 years ago.
It was in March, wasn't it?
March 20th, 1969.
Right.
Well, let's just get the date. Let's say it's nearly 40 years ago. So after the speech was over, my doctor, Dr. Dunnigan, went out to the car and wrote down everything he could remember. And then in the intervening years, he made other notes. And then when he met me, after he met me and he got back to his home, he made me a copy of a little audio cassette in which he recalled all of the things that he had remembered and written down in the intervening years. And this is what Dr. Day said. He was going to tell them about the future of America that he had learned at Planned Parenthood. Well, I went back into my documentation at Planned Parenthood, and during those years, in the late 60s, they were funded by the Ford Foundation and other, like the Rockefeller Foundation, which means they were being used for whatever purposes they wanted by these wealthy foundations. So that means that he was being illuminated, Dr. Day was being illuminated.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay, now, he says, he said that Dr. Day now is going to start talking. I want to let you know that I discovered an organized force during my stay in New York. This organized force is so powerful that it fears no one or anything. It believes that no one can stop it. And he went on to say that this organized force has a timetable constructed by those inside. And then he started telling him what he had been taught by that organized force. Now, because of time constraints, I gave this this discussion on a talk show a couple nights ago, and it took 2 hours. And I've gone through my list and marked up about half of them, because we won't have time to cover them all and discuss them as well.
Well, Chris, we go ahead and do all you can, and we'll just get you on again next week, maybe, and finish it up. So you can do the first half tonight and the second half next week.
Well, if you wish to do that, Dr. Stan, I'd be happy to assist any way I can.
All right, you go right ahead.
Okay, now, he said the first thing he mentioned was suicide. Well, by the way, that I want to point out, this is not in any particular order. I don't even know if these are in the order that he said, and probably not. But these are the order that Dr. Dunnigan sent me. He said, Dr. Day learned, suicide will be promoted and encouraged, and it will become more common. Now, this was way back in 69 when I don't think anyone was committing, you know, except some really extreme individuals were committing suicide, but it's very common today. They just did a bit on TV. They're showing these stupid stunts these young people are just doing crazy things, and if they die, they die. There's no concern about the future. They don't care about injuring themselves. They don't care about medical insurance or whatever. They just do it, and that's part of this process. They don't care about life, and I believe the reason is that's because of evolution. If I could be dictator for one day and get everything I wanted done, the first thing I would do would be to abolish public education. This is Ralph Epperson now. And then that would stop the teaching of evolution. Evolution's purpose is to teach there is no God, there is no morality, there is no future, there's no life hereafter, because we're all animals. And that's exactly why these young people are committing suicide. Okay, now, Dr. Day went on to say the population must be limited to 2 children per family. Now, if I may, Dr. Stan, I'd like to go back to 1973 when I taught my first class at the community college in Oregon. And I walked into my classroom, assigned classroom. I was teaching part-time, just one class, one class. It was 3 times a week, but one class. And there was a drawing, one of these posters that these are printed on the cork board adjacent to the blackboard. And it was a drawing, cartoon form, of the Earth, and it was showed little bitty bumps all over. It's just populated from coast to coast and around the world, all Europe and Africa, everything else you could see on that one half of the globe. And it was populated by little bumps, meaning people. In fact, there were actually people falling off of the Earth. So after I got through with my amenities, like who I am or what I'm going to be teaching, I said, how many of you in this classroom believe this poster? And many of them were probably embarrassed, but about half the students raised their right hand. So they had been taught there was a population explosion, just like Dr. Day was preparing these people with. So I said, here's your first assignment. I want you to move the entire population of the Earth, which was 4 billion people at the time. I said, move them to Oregon. We were in Portland. I said, move them and then sink the rest of the world. Sink it. Make Oregon the only habitable place on the globe. In other words, the Africa and Europe and China, everywhere else is sunk, gone. And I said, how many people, determined by mathematics, how many people will be standing on how many's head on how far we'll reach to the moon? That's what we've been taught. We're population explosion. And when they figured it out and came back the next day, they were stunned because a family of 4 would have a piece of land 50 by 53, which could be pretty close to the size of a residential lot. So what population explosion is there? And I taught them in the course of my class that it wasn't too many people. It was too much socialism that destroys the incentive to produce. And I convinced them. And they went on campus to the other professors, and they got furious. And I kept my job, but they did not like me to teach them because the official dogma was, according to Dr. Day, the population must be limited. And there were books written about it. Okay, now, Dr. Day pointed out the government will promote contraception by making it universally acceptable. Now, we know that they teach abortion. Sex is available. It's an alternative lifestyle. If you want to enjoy it, there's nothing wrong with it. There's no morality. They don't teach sex and morality. And if you get pregnant, you can commit have an abortion. So, and then they actually hand out condoms. So, Dr. Day, in 1969, there was none of that. But nowadays, now he's absolutely right. It's actually come to pass. The next thing he said, sex will be out in the open and outside of the marriage will be promoted. Oh, that's never happened in America, not since 1969, has it? This Dr. Day was being illuminated because this is the program. Now, how do they get people to think sex? It's in every aspect. You can't buy a used car without someone hustling a sex. It's on TV, there's Sex in the City, it's on black nudity and sex on your movies, songs sing about it. This is all brand new. When I was a young boy growing up in high school here in Tucson, back in the 50s, we didn't worry about this. We didn't have any songs singing about sex or movies with it, nudity, anything else. So he's right. It all happened since then. That Dr. Day went on to point out men would become more feminized and women more masculine. Look at your clothing today, Dr. Stan. Not yours and mine, but go drive by a high school, and they all look alike. They're all wearing these baggy pants, and they're huggers where they can see the above their belt line. There's a gap of skin. They're all carrying backpacks now, I guess because they can't have lockers in school. Some men wear their hair long, and they're like women, and or they'll all go bald because the men and women both can do that. So his point was well taken. Next, Dr. Day said travel would become a privilege to increase control of individuals and families. Well, that's not happening. Let me tell you this, Dr. Stan. In my book in 1985, I quoted another book by, in fact, I got it right here. It's called The Weston Crisis by James P. Warburg. Now, James Warburg is the son of a Paul Warburg connected to the Warburg banking family. So this guy's an insider. And he wrote the book back in 1959. Let me tell you what he said about the gas prices. Because, well, you know, this, of course, isn't true now because President Bush promised us that if he found any price gouging, he would put a stop to it in the oil prices that they were paying $3 a gallon for gasoline. By the way, how much is your gas in California today, Dr. Stan?
It's about $2.85 for the cheapest. That's what I buy.
So it's gone down a little because it was like $3.50 last time you and I talked about it.
Right. Oh, no, because I expect it's going to be back up there. I think this is sort of the calm before the storm. But go ahead.
Well, let me go to page 53. Listen to this, Dr. Stan. He talked about eight giant oil companies forming a cartel. Now, he said there's eight. The other books I've read said there are seven.
At that time, there may very well there were the seven sisters. Now there are basically five major oil companies. So there's BP, Shell, okay. Exxon, and then there's Chevron, and there is there's Conoco. But yeah. There are five major oil companies today. The seven sisters have become five sisters.
Okay. That's probably because of mergers, same people, right? Anyway, he's saying back in 1959, there were eight giant oil companies, five of them American. They controlled the non-communist world supply of oil, maintaining administered prices, which yield exorbitant profits. Oh, no, we can't have exorbitant profits. President Bush promised us he'd put a stop to that. So he went on to point out that way back, understand this is many years ago, 1959, that these people were producing the oil for 30 cents a barrel, and they were selling it for $2.16 a barrel. Now, if you buy something for 30 cents and sell it for $2.10, you're making a 500% profit, 600%, whatever it is. That's not too shabby, Dr. Stan. You make that on your investments, don't you, Dr. Stan?
I wish I did.
Yes, wouldn't that be something? Would you call that an exorbitant profit?
Right.
Okay, now, as a little exercise, in my book, The Unseen Hand, for 1985, I took the 30 cents and increased it 5% per year. And I found out that whatever it was $2 or $3, whatever it was, and then the price of oil at that time was $30 a barrel, and they were still making a 600% profit. Now, I've not done that with the $60 barrel price, but I'll bet you, if it's not 600, it's probably even more. A 600% profit. That's not exorbitant, according to George Bush. You explain that to me.
Well, remember, George Bush comes from a oil family. His family, father is very close to the people who run Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and certainly they tie into this whole world oil movement. So when George Bush says he's going to do it with exorbitant profits, I have to question that. I mean, when he came into office, oil was $10 a barrel, and it pushed over 70 today. Somebody's making a profit.
Yep.
Go right ahead, Ralph.
Okay, we're talking about Dr. Richard Alday's report of a 3 years of experience learning about the what he called a network that he had learned about, organized force, he called it. But here's the reason that I was reminded of what Dr. Day said, you know, years later. But the next one's really important. Dr. Day reported that bridges and roads and other infrastructure will be allowed to deteriorate. And suddenly a bridge collapses in Milwaukee. And they claim that the bridge had been reported in danger for like, I don't know, since 10, 20 years, whatever it was, some time, I forgot now, but years, and they did nothing to repair it. Nothing to fix it. Why? Now, let me ask you, let me point out something that maybe you and your listeners hadn't paid attention to. You might remember there was they showed a video of the bridge collapsing, and they called it a surveillance camera, and it was put up there by the Corps of Engineers. And now it sounds to me like a surveillance camera would be intended to measure traffic or watch traffic, but you'll notice the next time you watch it, if you see it again, that from this camera you can't see the traffic because it's on the infrastructure, the green metal parts underneath the bridge. And that's it. Now, why would you want to take pictures of that? Could it be that that thing was, they wanted it to collapse, and they wanted to show pictures of it collapsing, because then they reported that this bridge had some sort of a coded number showing what kind of shape it was in, and that there were 70,000 other bridges in America which had the same rating on it.
Well, now tell me, Sidney, why did Dr. Day say that they wanted the infrastructure to begin to fall apart? Did he mention why they wanted
No. Dr. Day never explained, to my knowledge, at least from what Dr. Dunnick can say, never explained any of these things. He just made these statements.
All right, fine.
I'm giving you my take on it years later. But as far as I know, he didn't explain why. But I'll tell you this, Dr. Stan, if we start to repair bridges, it's going to be very expensive. So I have a feeling that might be why they wanted it to deteriorate. Instead of doing a little bit every year, we're going to have to do it all at once, and that's going to take a lot of money, and a lot of money quickly.
Well, I think what you really have to understand, Ralph, is that, Sidney, we pay a federal gasoline tax, and that money is all in the federal, in a special fund. It's a fund to be specifically used for repairing our roads and our infrastructure, but they steal it all the time. In other words, they take it from one fund and they simply put it into another in violation of the law. When Jimmy Baker did that, why, we sent him to prison, Pastor Jimmy Baker. When Congress does that, we give them a higher salary.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we reward them for being so efficient.
Right.
In other words, they didn't tax us to get the new money. They just took it from another and then didn't use it. That's okay.
And, of course, this is what they're doing with the Medicare fund. This is what they're doing with the Social Security fund. There are funds there. They call them trust funds. And there, of course, the money is to be there for future generations. The only trouble is they steal the money and they put in an IOU. That's what they've done with the Highway Trust Fund.
But, Dr. Dan, you're not implying that our Congress is full of criminals and crooks,
absolutely,
are you?
By their own standards. Go ahead.
Okay, let's get back to Dr.
Hold Dave. That thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ralph was just bringing out one of the interesting things that Dr. Richard Day had said, and that was that the infrastructure, the roadways and the bridges and the infrastructure of our society was going to be allowed to degenerate. And, of course, this is exactly what it's doing. And, of course, when Ralph reread the interview the material he got from Dr. Dunnigan, he was impressed by that because, of course, we've all heard this story recently of the bridge collapsing up there in, was it in Wisconsin?
Milwaukee, yeah.
Milwaukee, okay, fine. And, of course, the other thing that Ralph brought out was that there just happened to be a camera installed there so that they could watch this one segment of highway go down. And you have to ask yourself why they had a video it did not watch the traffic. It couldn't see the traffic. All it could do was see the bridge collapsing, and you wonder if they installed that traffic, that video, because they anticipated that bridge coming down. Anyway, all we know is that it came down, and simply this is what Dr. Day was talking about back in 1969. Go right ahead, Ralph.
Okay, now, Dr. Day then went on to say we would become desensitized to violence. Have you heard the latest thing? There was someone being raped and mugged and beat in a hallway, and 10 or 15 people saw it and did nothing. people were living in, they were in apartments, and they were in the hallway, I guess, and they'd hear the noise, and they'd open the door and look down the hall and see it happening and then shut the door and go back to their TV set. In other words, we don't care anymore about our neighbors. It's like watching a TV show. And we've got songs they're singing today about don't become a snitch. It's not right to tell on your neighbors. And young people, according to the news reports, are if they see an act of violence or they hear about it, they won't report it because they don't want to be a snitch. There's songs, don't be a snitch, don't tell on your neighbors. And that's accepted as the standard.
But, of course, that is primarily within the black community, and that's the hip-hop songs that are being sold by the black singers, who are being paid fantastic sums of money by Time Warner, by produces these songs, these violent songs that tell people not to be a snitch, and it's aimed at the black community so that the black community does not help the police solve the crimes, and the crime rate increases. And you have to ask yourself, why the responsible people at Time Warner, one of the largest corporations in America, would be putting out this sort of garbage to destroy the black community. Go right ahead, Ralph.
You remember the story of, I think it was Charlton Heston, he was a stockholder in some big corporation at a stockholders meeting. He went to the microphone and read the lyrics that company had put out. And he was told to shut up and be silent, that those were offensive.
Right, and that's what they're feeding into the minds of our kids.
Yes, that's okay. They can listen to it, but adults can't. In fact, that was the next thing he said. Musicians would use coded language to reach the young people. Now, here's the strategy. They knew that if mom and dad heard songs promoting drugs and sex and violence, this is primarily back in the rock and roll days. Maybe it's not so bad today. I don't know. No one seems to care. But during those early years, they knew that mom and dad would shut the radio off. So they or let Junior listen. So they coded the language and let Junior know what the words meant. You know, the greatest example was the song by the Beatles called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And mom and dad, her dad said, oh, isn't that nice? Lucille Ball, Lucy, in the black sky with shiny diamonds. What a beautiful thought. But it was L. Lucy was stood for L. Of course, the L in Lucy. S was sky, and D was diamonds. LSD. Whatever LSD is called. Some sort of acid. But the point was that it was LSD. It was Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It was about drugs, and it was promoting drug use. Yellow Submarine was a song about Downer or something. Other songs, You Make Me High, You Make... Oh, and they say, well, that's good. You're energized by this kind of stuff. So they knew what they were doing. They were convincing our young people to take drugs with music. Now, listen to this. This was said in 1969. Dr. Day said terrorism would increase so that the public would relinquish control of their lives to an increasing government. Huh? 1969? We weren't experiencing terrorism in those years. But he was anticipating, he was taught, it's coming, so get prepared for it. Albert Pike wrote a letter, and I don't remember the year, Dr. Smith, maybe you can help me with this, in which he predicted three world wars. World War I was going to change the government in Germany. And the Second World War was going to destroy the Tsar and the Christian nation of Russia. And the Third World War was going to be that they, in the conspiracy, would unleash the nihilist. And the word nihilist is someone who preaches revolution by terror.
Well, Ralph, you go right ahead there.
Okay. Now, I know you probably had people on the air that talked about the Oklahoma City bombing and the 9/11 thing, and pointed out that those things were not acts of terror, as we call it. You know, they weren't done by Al-Qaeda. They were done by the United States government. A lot of people don't believe that. I'm one that does. But the point is that the only acts of terror, in my mind at least, that we've had in the United States were all done by the United States. But anyway, the point is that they used that, whether they did, the Al-Qaeda used it or not, they did it or not, to use it to get us into the war in Iran and to go into Afghanistan. And it's costing us a lot of our personal liberties, slowly but surely, in the principle of boiling a frog. You don't put him in boiling water. You put him in warm water and just increase the temperature 1 degree at a time. And then when it's time to eliminate him, the water, boiling water, will do it for you. But you've done it 1 degree at a time. Because was put into hot water, he'd jump out. You listen to this, Dr. Day, Dr. Stam. Dr. Day said, abortion will become normal and tax-supported. And he learned this from Planned Parenthood, which now, I believe, gets tax monies to fund its activities. Isn't that interesting?
Well, because that was 4 years before Roe versus Wade, 1969-1973.
Yeah. He went on to say that fathers would have no say in the abortion decision. And, boy, that's true. You'll notice, if anyone knows this, that you're a medical doctor, you know that it takes two to make a fetus, Dr. Stan. You know that we don't call them babies anymore. It's a fetus. And it takes two, but the husband, the father, has no say in whether or not the baby's going to be terminated. And you abort by abortion. And he's absolutely right. Oh, listen to this. Dr. Day predicted that homosexuality and lesbianism will be encouraged. Well, we don't find that the case today. Our young people are being taught it's an alternative lifestyle, and that there are gay parades through the streets of some of our major cities, and thousands of people participate, and now gays and lesbians want a marriage contract.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ralph, go right ahead.
Okay, we're talking about Dr. Day and his comments in 1969. Ultimately, reproduction will be done without sex, meaning it will all be done in test tubes. Now, that statement, I don't think they've got the ability to do this, but I don't think it's become universal, but that's quite a prediction, and maybe someday we'll find that Dr. Day was right. Oh, he said this in 1969, Dr. Day. With divorce will become more prevalent, and living with your partner will become preferred. And now we've got, I believe the latest statistics are 1 in 5 marriages make it to 5 years. And many people don't want to get married. They want to live together. And that's become almost accepted. Maybe it's not completely, but almost accepted by our society. Years ago, that was frowned upon, and if you wanted to live with somebody, you got married, but not anymore. And we got so many one-parent families today. Young people are growing up without without one parent, and especially if it's a male, they don't have that strong male image of what a man should do and do what's right, etc. Dr. Day said women will be encouraged to work outside of the family. And that started in World War II, which was predicted by Albert Pike way back, I think, in 1855 or something like that, in that letter that he wrote. And there was a world war, and we needed a lot of soldiers to fight it, so men could not stay home and take care of building the airplanes and the tanks, et cetera, that they needed. So the women went. We had pictures of Rosie the Riveter going to work and after she got out, she realized she could compete in man's world, and so now we've got women working and competing with men in the workforce, which is fine, except that, I don't know if you know this, Dr. Stan, I've got some articles on this I clip out of my newspapers, that there are women who are getting fed up with the corporate world, and they're quitting and going home to raise junior and and sister again. And that's a very healthy sign, in my opinion. They're free. I don't think anyone should force them to one or the other. But the women find out it's not such a rosy garden out there. Okay, Dr. Day said men will be constantly transferred by their companies to produce tension within the family. Let me tell you another story about this, Dr. Stan. I think I gave the speech in Tucson here several years ago, and when I came to this, after a friend of mine was in attendance, and afterwards he came up to me with his eyes like saucers and said, "You know, Ralph, I never thought about that." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I worked for IBM, International Business Machines," and he said, "I was a young engineer, and I got transferred so often, it cost me two divorces." Now, you could argue, well, you know, maybe there was other things, but they, in the IBM company, as young engineers, used to laugh and joke that IBM stands for I've Been Moved. So a lot of people believe this, that they saw it happen. And according to this program, it was to cause tension in the family. And my friend said he blamed it on that all this constant transferring cost him two marriages. Now, Thomas Watson, the founder of IBM, was a member of the CFR and a major player in this conspiracy. He was probably one of the ones who felt, since he had a huge corporation, he could afford to do this. Dr. Day said, this I don't think has completely come to pass yet, but we're working on it. Euthanasia, meaning the killing of old people, will become common. They will be declared to be useless eaters in the new society. Now, the goal is to eliminate people who cannot produce anymore. And in China, and sometimes, in fact, even in Russia, I covered this in The Unseen Hand, the communist nations already had a program to euthanize those who were unable to produce any longer. They put them in what they call happy homes, and then they were given shots, and 2 weeks later, they just happened to pass away. So we haven't had that yet in America, but I think we're getting close to it. Dr. Day predicted costs of medical care will increase so that old people cannot afford it. Boy, has that happened. I was just, you know, they showed this program on TV tonight where these young people are just smashing everybody and causing, doing these strange stunts that cause injuries that, you know, young people are actually dying because of it, and they're threatening to sue and to websites that are promoting it. And this is all going to, in part, it's not very much, cost us more money to pay for all this thing. Plus, we've got 25%, the last figure I heard, 25% of our medical costs is incurred for keeping the records for the government. And it's probably even higher than that today. So we've got all these records. Every time someone gets a sniffle or a cut finger, they got to report it in some statistics. And all this record keeping is done in the hospitals and, you know, the offices of these doctors. Secondly, one of the things that we've done, and you know this too, Dr. Stan, I'm sure, is that they've lowered the standards for our doctors with the affirmative action and the quotas and et cetera, so that less qualified people are getting in. And when you do that, that the result is malpractice suits. Doctors who are not completely qualified or didn't, you know, do the standard work that they used to do before now are causing malpractice suits, which really raises the cost of insurance. And I think you know this. You might be able to give me some statistics. When was the last time you practiced, Dr. Stan?
I quit about 1994.
You know what malpractice was doing.
Oh, yeah.
So you saw it happening.
I sure did.
And it went up by leaps and bounds. It wasn't just by 10% or something. It just skyrocketed.
Yeah, we were paying probably $40,000 or $50,000 a year for my malpractice insurance.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot worse today. And that cost is not absorbed by the doctor. It's passed on to the patient.
Yeah, that, of course, the doctor just quits. I was at a meeting about 2 weeks ago with a doctor who actually moved up, I think, into either Oregon or Washington. And he had been here in California, And he told me that he practiced up there until the cost of his malpractice insurance equaled his whole income. And at that point, he said, why bother to practice? He just retired. In other words, he was making no money at all. It all went for malpractice insurance.
I'll tell you, it's just, you know, there's no question. I believe we've got the greatest medical care in the world. We're the people that invent these specialized equipment and technologies and cures and medicines. And we lead the world, and yet they claim we've got the worst system in the world.
But it really, in some respects, we do, because there's so many things the doctors do not know about, and there's so many things that the information is being kept from the doctors, and this is the great tragedy. There are cures for cancer. There have been for at least 50 years. In fact, if you in the copy of this interview that we have, Dr. Richard Day says, treatments for cancers are known and they're going to be suppressed. Did he tell you that?
Yeah, that might be, I think a little later he mentioned
so,
that.
That's I mean, correct. The doctors here are spending all their time treating diseases that really aren't needed. There's ways to prevent cancer. There are things in milk, especially this recombinant bovine growth hormone produced milk that increased the incidence of breast carcinoma 7 times. And the incidence of prostatic cancer 4 times, and this is why 1 in 3 men has prostatic cancer. When was the last time any doctor ever told a patient, you should not be drinking milk because it's not healthy? And the doctors are not told these things, and there's so much that really, if we had the opportunity to inform the doctors, they could do so much better a job. They're good people, they're trying to do it with the best that they can, but the information they need to help their patients is being concealed from them by their own organizations and, of course, by the drug companies, and the drug companies releasing drugs that should never be released because they are lethal and they create all sorts of other problems. So I wish I could say that we had the greatest medical care in the world. We have the potential for it. We have the people to do it. But unfortunately, there are some wicked people working within our medical organizations and within the hierarchy of medicine and within the Federal Drug Administration and the pharmaceutical industry that have a different agenda. And this is why, Sydney, if you compare the longevity of the average American male to that in this country to males elsewhere, we're down about 46. We used to be 11th in the world in longevity. Now we're 46. This did not happen by accident. And we continue on our present course, why we'll be rivaling Zambia and Tanzania before long. But go right ahead.
Well, someone reported on one of these TV shows, news shows, that every Democrat candidate running in the primaries is in favor of a government medical insurance. And yet, I was listening to Dr. Walt Williams, who's filling in for us today, and I'm going to see if we can get this off of a, hopefully he put it on a website, but Dr. Williams put some figures out that show that millions of people in England are waiting for medical work that they need, and that many of them are dying before they get a chance to get in to get it done.
You're absolutely right, and socialized medicine is not the problem. In fact, if you think medicine is expensive now, when you're having to pay for it, wait till it's free. It'll really be expensive. the people don't understand that socialized medicine will not solve our problem. There's no problem facing medicine today that a new government program won't make worse.
Well, you're right. Dr. Day said medicine will become tightly controlled. And I pointed out that a doctor can only do those things that are prescribed by the FDA or the AMA or something like that, and so that doctors who discover a new treatment on their own or use some naturopathic solutions are criticized. In fact, even have their licenses taken away by the FDA and the AMA, whatever it is. Like you pointed out, that cancers can be. We've got cancer cures all over the place, but we're not doing that. We're still using cutting and burning and chemotherapy. By the way, there's a talk about someday they're going to make vitamins a prescription item. And I love to point out to you that if your mother tells you to eat your peas because they're good for you and they're high in vitamin C or whatever it is, she will be charged with prescribing medicine without a license, Dr. Stan. So if you got children, don't tell them to eat their vegetables because they're good for them. And Popeye will not be encouraged or allowed anymore to say that eating your spinach makes you strong, because if they do, they'll be practicing medicine without a license. Dr. Day said, if you don't have a job, you won't be able to get medical insurance. Now, I don't know if that's medical attention. So I imagine it's going to come to the point where it'll be so expensive that they can't afford not to treat you unless you've got medical insurance. I don't know. We'll have to see if that's going to happen. I will say this, and you know this, and I'm sure your listeners do as well, that there are hospitals shutting down emergency rooms. They're shutting down their certain operations. And you said even doctors are leaving because they can't practice anymore because of the high cost and the hospitals that are expected to treat people that don't have insurance, the illegal aliens. It's becoming a nationwide problem.
That's very, very true. A number of hospitals have actually had to close or at least close their emergency rooms because of that. And they're required by federal law to give free medical care to people who are in this country illegally. Yeah. Why would you do something like that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you want to encourage illegal immigration. When you understand that that is a major agenda of the Bush administration, you would understand why they haven't closed our southern border to protect us from terrorists, and why, of course, they push this legislation that encourages people to come to this country from other countries so they can get free medical care.
Yeah,
right ahead, Ralph.
Right, free education and
free housing and welfare and food stamps and all those wonderful things. And all you have to do is come to the land of milk and honey, and you're going to be taken care of.
I live in Arizona, 60 miles from the Mexican border in a town called Tucson, and I heard the sheriff from Santa Cruz County, which is the major city in that county, is Nogales. There's a Nogales, Mexico, and then across the border is Nogales, Arizona. And he said that 75% of his prisoners in his county jail were illegal aliens. Now, think about how much that costs those taxpayers in that district county to take care of these people. That's very expensive. When you've got eight times as many, or four times, or six, whatever it was, as many prisoners as you normally carry, you've got to feed them and provide medical care for them and more air conditioning and heat and everything else. It's going to, now you can't bankrupt the county, I'm sure, but someone's got to pay for that. Going to a hospital will become a privilege, not a right. Later, only those with medical insurance will be allowed into a hospital. And this might be one of the reasons why they're allowing the illegals to come in as well, because their hospitals just can't afford to do it anymore. And they're going to someday say, we simply can't afford to treat those without insurance. And we're going to have to all have it. And obviously, Hillary's saying we'll all get a free insurance. As you pointed out, it'll be free. We'll be told it's free, but it's going to be very expensive. But then we'll all be able to get it, and then I guess that won't matter. Here's something that Dr. Day pointed out. Doctors will become employees of companies, no longer to be considered as the employee of the patient. And probably the major thing that I'm aware of that's changed in that field is the HMO, which is a health maintenance, is that what they call it, a health maintenance organization? And those doctors are, they get paid bonuses for the profit they make, which means, and they get salaries, which means that they, they like very much to, maybe not give you some sort of prescribed treatment because it's going to reduce their profit at the end of the year.
You're absolutely right. The purpose of the HMO is not to treat the patient, but not to treat the patient every time you do anything with the patient, it costs you money. Would you rather go to a doctor who's going to get paid because he was taking care of you, or he was going to be paid not to take care of you? Which of the two types of doctors would you want to go to? Well, I'd want to go to one who is being paid to take care of me. But that's not what an HMO is. Would you really want, of course, to go to a mechanic to take care of your car if he was going to be paid not to fix the car and not to do the test, not to do the repairs that were necessary? And, of course, nobody would want to do that. and yet that's what you do with an HMO. And I would simply ask you, how many congressmen and senators belong to HMOs today? And I bet you could, you know, the 535 congressmen, senators, I bet you could count the number that, you know, that belong to an HMO, maybe on one finger. They're not going to do that. They know what it is. They would not submit their families to that. That is simply for you folks out there who are foolish enough, of course, to get into an HMO. Because the purpose of the HMO is not to take care of you, it's to make a profit. And the more you do, the less you make. That's what the name of the game is. And we've lost sight of the idealism that once made America the most noble of all professions. Well, Ralph, why don't we go ahead and get your website, your information out right now.
Well, you're very kind, Dr. Stan. I have a website, and if you want to go and read some of the books I've written and look at the videos, I just put out a second DVD. It's going to be listed on my catalog, and that catalog can be seen at Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and then there's a dash, not an underline, a dash, Ralph-Epperson, E as in Edward, P-P as in Peter, E-R-S-O-N, E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N.com, Ralph-Epperson. And if you want to call me, I've got 800 number, and I invite people to call if you've got some additional information for me or you want to be critical of what I'm saying, please call me, 800-422-3888. Notice I'm paying for the call, so I won't. It's a toll-free number to you. And I'll answer the phone and we'll talk.
All right, Ralph. Well, suddenly you've got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think we'll end with that then. If you say you want to come back, we'll finish the list. I've still got, it looks like we're about halfway through.
All right, well, I will give you a call and we'll, of course, go ahead and arrange for another evening. I think this is really so important, and I'm so glad that you got a chance to meet Dr. Dunnigan in person. I simply only talked to him a couple of times over the telephone. And as they say, we have an excellent four-tape set, four interviews, all talks with Dr. Dunnigan, who tells this story. And, of course, you may feel a little redundant, but it is certainly one of the most important four tape sets we have, and we do have it with a transcript. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. There really are people out there who are withholding treatment for cancer because they have no concern that people are going to die. Ralph, hang on just one more minute. Go right ahead. I guess we've got 1 minute before we get you back, because I do want, Chris, want to get your telephone number. Just give me your number again. I'll put it out when we get to the next part of the program.
Okay, you're very kind. 800-422-3888. I'm in Arizona. It's we're in the we don't move during the daylight savings, so it's the same time as California Pacific time. So if you want to call, and during the day I'll answer PublicExpress. That's the name of my publishing company. But please keep in touch. I'll be happy to talk. I get calls all the time from people all over the country.
What sort of response do you get when you tell this story? Do you think people believe it?
No. They don't believe a lot of things I'm saying. But, what Dr. Day said in 1969 is coming true. In most of these cases, we can see the changes.
Okay,
and
hold that
thought.
Young people
hold didn't
that
live
thought.
In
We're gonna have to hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Ralph Epperson. Let me give you his telephone number if you'd like to get in touch with him. And he's got some fascinating information, books. We carry his three books, certainly The New World Order, The Unseen Hand, and, of course, Masonry, The Plot Against Christianity. But the is it Conspiracy Against Christianity?
Yeah, Conspiracy Against. That's
all right,
what it
fine.
Is.
But Ralph's number is 800-422-3888. That's 1-800-422-3888. And what is your website again?
It's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and then there's a dash, not an underscore, a dash, R-A-L-P-H dash, Epperson, E as in Edward, P-P as in Peter, two P's, E-R-S-O-N, Epperson.com, Ralph-Epperson.com.
And we'll certainly be getting in touch with you to arrange another interview.
You're very kind, Dr. Stan. God bless you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, that's Ralph, and we've known Ralph for many years, and He is a great patriot. But I want to talk about another great patriot. Apparently, my wife has said that Aaron Russo did pass away today. And, Sidney, I had the opportunity of talking to him a number of times and interviewing him. And, Sidney, we have seen his wonderful, wonderful film, From Freedom to Fascism. And Aaron was somebody who believed in America. We might even consider him a liberal in many respects. He came out of Hollywood, had been a very successful Hollywood producer and director. But you see today, the labels really don't mean anything. Whether you're liberal or conservative, right or left, we all are Americans. And the divisions between the two parties, the Democrats and Republicans, have certainly been artificially created so that they could get us fighting one another and never recognizing who the real enemy was. Well, Aaron Russo knew who the enemy was, and he knew it was the people working in government. Perhaps he didn't understand the spiritual implications of what's going on. I know I sent him a copy of my book. I don't know whether he ever had a chance to read it. I hope he did, because I hope it would lead him into a personal relationship with our Lord. But when he was dying and he had a recurrent bladder carcinoma, this did not distract him. His goal was to reach as many people as he could in the time that he had allotted to him. And even though I know he was in a great deal of pain, he was out there, of course, trying to rally people behind the one political candidate who certainly holds to traditional American values and supports the Constitution. And I'm not allowed by the Federal Communication Commission to mention the name of the specific candidate, but I think most of you know who I'm speaking of. Aaron Russo was certainly doing everything he could, trying to organize the American people right up until literally his last breath to try to preserve this country. Aaron Russo was a patriot who loved America. And I hope all of you will say a prayer for him tonight and thank God that he was here, that he really did have an opportunity to touch people's lives, to get a message out, a very important message. And once again, the film is From Freedom to Fascism, and you can see this up on the Internet. You can Google it in, and he has a website up there where you can watch it for nothing. And I'm really going to try to get copies of that and so we can make them available through my ministry. Aaron really was somebody who wanted to preserve America because he understood that liberty and limited government were synonymous, that tyranny and total government are synonymous, and he wanted to preserve a nation where men could be free. And he was willing to put his own money into making a motion picture and traveling around the country interviewing people. I'm sure in many ways was a long, hard, thankless job. But he did it because he believed in America. Can't we do any less? Can we simply ignore his sacrifice? Because if we lose America, then everything he did will have been for naught. And so I would ask you to say a prayer for Aaron tonight. Truly a great man, a great American, who loved this country greater than life itself. So until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.